Transportation Economic, or the Joint Subcommittee on Transportation Economic Development of Ways and Means. We have House Bill 5505 and House Bill 2168. We are here today, and we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 5505 and House Bill 2168. This is a continuation from yesterday's hearing. Let the record show that the Senate is in full attendance.
Thank you very much for that recognition.
Let the record show that the House members are very tardy, and Chair Butler is testifying in another committee this time and asking us to start the piece. But an A&W Diet Root Beer is here in his place.
Reflecting his lovely personality.
Reflecting his lovely personality. We took some testimony yesterday. I have one, two, three, four, five, six people left to testify. And if there's anyone here who didn't sign up yesterday to testify, please feel free to sign in on a signing sheet. But we'll go ahead and start. George Siegfried, Roger Zatera, and Joel, and John or Joel Schmidt?
Dr. Schmidt hasn't arrived.
Okay.
Brian Stern.
Brian Stern? Or is it Stern?
Stern.
Please come forward. All right. Okay, passed out paperwork. Dr. Siegfried, we called you first.
Yes.
So if you want to begin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to extend the testimony today from yesterday. Really appreciate that. I'd just like to read my opening statement to let you know basically why I'm here, and it's this one right here on top of your packet. I'd also like to give a disqualifier. I'm not a lobbyist, and I'm not real good at this. I don't do this a lot, but that's my disqualifier.
All right.
Every person owes a part.
Probably makes you more credible. It's kind of like being a lawyer, you know. I don't know if I'm a lawyer either.
Every person owes a part of his or her time and money to the business or industry in which they are engaged. No person has a moral right to withhold their support from an organization that is striving to improve conditions within his or her sphere. It's by Teddy Roosevelt. Every time I get frustrated with this process, I think of something like this, and that's another reason why I'm here today. As I said before, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is George Siegfried. I'm a doctor of chiropractic in active practice for 19 years. I'm the president of the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic. I represent approximately 100 doctors of chiropractic in Oregon. We are also supported today by the International Chiropractic Association, which has over 8,000 members. In fact, there's a letter in your handout right under my top, under my testimony from the executive director of the International Chiropractic Association. We have our signatures against this fee increase available as well. On my right is Dr. Zatera, ODOT's legislative chair, who's been in practice for 35 years. And on my left is Dr. Brian Stearns, past president of ODOT. Dr. Stearns and I were the founding, were also founding members of ODOT. So, as I said, you have our handouts, you have the budget, you have the Oregon statutes and rules, and a copy of the guidelines that we support. At least I dropped off a copy at your offices, and if you don't have one, I have another, an extra copy here as well. But I'd like to give you a little history of the situation that we're in today. Our position is that it's more than just a fee increase. The Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic disengaged this Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners some time ago because our committee members felt there were too many ethical violations. One example is the random investigation, random audit issue that you heard about yesterday, which we have documented on tape and transcript for your review if you would like. It is from a board meeting. I have that if you would like it at some point. Now, this is an Oregon board issue. This is not an ODOC or Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic issue. We felt we had no recourse with this board. But when they wanted to raise our fees, we decided to come to Salem and voice our opposition. This agency has accused us of passing out false information. In addition, we have Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic members who have heard this board speak on this subject of random investigation of field doctors on at least two separate occasions. As a result of this, an amendment is in process to prevent any investigation of any kind without a complaint. And I would like to, at this time, thank Mr. McTagg, who's the executive director of this board, for working with us on this issue, because we consider it to be a very serious confidentiality issue. So I'd like to thank him for that. At the same time, there was a letter yesterday that you saw, a yellow astro-colored letter from Dr. McCarthy from the board that was sent out to our profession, talking about the information that was being disseminated by our organization, which, by the way, we put out to literally try to shake doctors out of the bushes to come forward to give their opinion on this issue. This information in here, he says that we are spreading false information. Well, our documentation is just the opposite, and we'd be happy to provide you with that if you'd like. And then there's other information in here that says that this Oregon board has tried to work with us, and we have failed in attempting to work with them. Well, we have documentation to show you that, in fact, we propose things to this board which they have rejected. So I'd like, we have documentation for that if you would like. Now, I might just add, in the context that we are dealing with fiscal issues, I called Mr. James Hendry, who's a member of this board, and he's a lawyer. He's a lay member of this board. And I asked him if he knew about this on stationery from the board. And I said, he said, no, I didn't know about this. And I thought to myself, how much did this cost? This is a public policy statement. Was there a board meeting held? Were there minutes held? Was there a vote given? And he said he didn't hear about it. So I wanted to make that clear, because there's that issue plus the cost of this. Now, what is ODOC's position? To begin with, I'd like to tell you that we support the legislative mandate that the legislature of Oregon has given this board to exist, and then allowing allowing this board to protect the public by maintaining minimal standards, assure good quality chiropractic care, allow us doctors to practice, and allow the people of Oregon to receive reasonable and necessary chiropractic care by following the statutes and rules. But at the same time, we're opposed to this 50% fee increase requested by this agency. And the reason is, we studied the budget, we have a lot of questions. Now, please understand that we're not lawyers, we're not accountants, we're not analysts, but we can read and we know the history of what's going on here. And we think that this board is being fiscally irresponsible, wasting valuable time, and quite frankly, wasting the doctors' and the taxpayers' money by misallocating funds. We believe this state agency is an agency gone awry. It's going in the wrong direction. It's not fulfilling its mission statement. And we think it's in the process of becoming a bigger bureaucracy, and it concerns us. We believe it's operating above the law. So why is ODOC against this? Why is the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic against this fee increase? Well, to begin with, this agency says they have not had a fee increase since 1991. They say they need more money for sexual misconduct cases, excessive treatment, and excessive fee complaints. However, it appears to us And I'm going to qualify this by saying maybe we're wrong, and if I am, I would defer to Mr. Olson on this respectfully. But it appears to us that they have had some budget relief since 1995 when they adopted national guideline testing. So number one, we oppose this fee increase because we are seriously concerned about how this fee increase would be used by this agency. We're seriously concerned about what they have been doing with the current fees. Now, we did some other research and compared our fees and complaints to the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners that Mr. Vick talked about a little bit yesterday. And I put a chart here for you to compare. Our relicensing fee is $250. They're requesting $375. The Oregon Board of Medical Examiners relicensing fee is $219. The Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners overlooks 1,000, give or take, active doctors. The Oregon Board of Medical Examiners overlooks 8,100, give or take, active doctors. Our board receives 40 to 50 yearly complaints. That's 3 to 4 a month. Of those complaints, according to Mr. Henry, a lay member of the board, 25% are sexual misconduct, 33% are overutilization, 33% are others. The Oregon Medical Board receives 400 yearly complaints, 30 to 40 a month. We have one full-time investigator. They have 6 full-time investigators. We have one investigator per 1,000 doctors. They have one investigator for 1,500 doctors. We have a backlog of sexual misconduct cases and other cases. They have no backlog. As a rule, a case in the medical board system is solved within a year, and that's a long time, I was told. Now, we don't understand why our board wants another $59,000 for an investigator that appears to be unnecessary. According to the U.S. Department of Commerce, there's a 6% aberrancy in all professionals' behavior. Our profession is below the national average at 3 to 4%, according to their budget and according to the number of complaints they're reporting. Now, I want to make this clear. This doesn't make our problems any more appealing. However, we believe the legislature established ORSs and OARs to deal with this aberrant behavior. Number 3, on page 8 of the budget, we think we found a budget error. Stated increases would be $205,000, but our math indicates $280,000. We're not sure what that means, but it sure is a lot of money, and that's also in your pamphlet that we handed out. Number 4, the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners wants $32,000 for practice and utilization guidelines, which you have a copy of. These guidelines already exist and were adopted by the International Chiropractic Association, which has over 8,000 members. Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic is the only Oregon affiliate with the International Chiropractic Association, and we have a letter of support from them in your handout. Now, the significance of this is these guidelines are also supported by at least 9 other state organizations and are congruent with what are the Association of Chiropractic Colleges practice paradigm, which was signed by all 16 chiropractic colleges. So there's a tremendous amount of support throughout the profession for these national guidelines. And as we speak, other state organizations are considering these for adoption. Now, the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic thinks that chiropractic in Oregon is no different than chiropractic in New Jersey, New York, Florida, California, Great Britain, or Canada. The Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners could save not only the $32,000 that they want for these guidelines, but up to $225,000 to $400,000 overall. To our knowledge, no other state board is spending the doctor's money on guidelines and development. The current Oregon practice guidelines, which have 3 chapters, took 3 to 4 years to develop, and we don't know what the cost is, and they have not even been peer-reviewed to my knowledge. The guidelines you have in front of you, or this booklet here, this one booklet, has 17 chapters that took 2.5 years. Now, this agency declared their guidelines outdated in 1996. The Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic proposed these guidelines in 1997, but they were rejected by the board. These guidelines fit almost every chiropractic practice need. Now, in Oregon, we have a little difference, and that is we have the practice of minor surgery, obstetrics and gynecology, and proctology available to those doctors. There are special rules, regulations, educational requirements for those. Boundary laws in Oregon are included in our statutes and rules, and we have those handouts for you if you would like them. Number 5, we're against the $59,000 for an investigator, which we believe would be solved if there were proper allocation of the doctor's fees would eliminate the need for another investigator. Plus, you have my earlier references to the Oregon Medical Board. Number six, we're against the Oregon Board spending our money for public education because national, state, and local doctors do it all the time. They do it more efficiently. There's basic information that they could be handing out to the public that's already available. For example, just like the Oregon Medical Board, they have pamphlets like this that are available to people, and then there's the staff to answer questions if needed. This is the basic information that we think is sufficient. Number seven, this budget asks more money due to excessive fees and excessive treatment. Well, we're opposed to excessive fees and we're opposed to excessive treatment, and that comes under the category of overutilization. And we would like to see the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners pass a rule on this. The legislature encouraged it in 1991 because of the 1197 fiasco that we went through as a profession. This board was given a fee increase to basically clean up our profession, and this was one of the biggest arguments against us. They haven't done that yet. In fact, the Oregon Board voted down such a rule in 1999, according to Jim Henry, a layperson and a lawyer as a member of the board. Now, this is just one of several examples of this agency that we feel is acting improperly. Now, at this time, Mr. Chairman, I would ask if I could introduce Dr. Satara to give the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic Solutions. As I said earlier, Dr. Satara is our legislative chair, and he's been in practice for 35 years. Dr. Satara?
Thank you, Dr. Satara. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. I think it would be in our best interest if we adopted national guidelines. As Dr. Siegfried pointed out earlier, this would save us between at least $32,000 a year. And I did contact the Florida Chiropractic Association, who is active in developing the Florida guidelines, and they spent about $250,000 developing those in the mid-90s. And those are available for us, even as pristine copies we could use. If we use those guidelines or the ICA guidelines, along with the cervical acceleration deceleration guidelines with Senator Ringo talked about yesterday, they would cover about 90% of what chiropractors do in Oregon. We could add a few extra chapters to cover our OBGYN minor surgery proctology differences in them. The other thing I always thought we could do is when it comes to renewing licensees fees, we could probably do that on a quarterly basis, which would maintain more even cash flow, or anniversary date, whatever works best. This would maintain an even cash flow and an even employment flow as well. One of the ways we could really save money is with contested case history is by contested cases by using dispute resolution or a negotiating settlement. It's also my opinion that we could best use the volunteer staff. We have 80 volunteer doctors who volunteer their time now. I was a board member from 1993 to 1997, and I reviewed a lot of cases. And I really felt kind of unease when I heard this doctor yesterday who said he was on peer review for 3 years, and that it took him about 100 hours to review a case. And I don't know of any case that would take 100 hours to review. That doesn't seem possible, because I've reviewed several hundred as a board member and in private evaluations for different insurance carriers, and there isn't a case, a really involved case would take 5 to 6 hours for review before you could make a decision. The other way money could be saved, of course, is reduce in-state travel. We could use teleconferences or TV conferences, which we do all the time, to save our travel time so we can meet and discuss issues. One of the paramount issues we have is a sexual misconduct problem. And frankly, yesterday I found it kind of embarrassing as no one pointed out the fact that we have administrative laws and rules. And for your convenience, I have put those in your packet so that you could follow, maybe look at them, what they are, what we have. For example, administrative rules, on administrative rules, we have what is sexual misconduct.
This one
is right here. We have what it is. It's already in rule, and that rule is adopted in August 2000 when it was updated. We also have in statute ORS 684-100, which is the statute which ties in unprofessional or dishonorable conduct, which dovetails the ORS. So there is statutes and rule governing this issue of sexual misconduct. Sexual misconduct is not a treatment or not a guideline issue. It is a legal issue. and should not be confused. So the problem about investigative process to investigate any process is short. It's what comes after that. But we feel that the money for an investigator is a waste, as well as the $32,000 for guidelines. And if there is a problem with sexual predator, we think they should be turned over to the local district attorney. One of the problems we have about the board says it's got a backlog of cases. Well, I don't see why we couldn't use former board members or former peer review members who could simply volunteer their time to review these contested or these cases. I think it could be done very effectively and save a great deal of time and money. Now, possibly we're not trained or expertise to do sexual misconduct cases. Those could be left for someone else. In summary, we support the legislative mandate giving this agency the chance to follow its mission statement, follow the statutes, be fiscally responsible, accountable, and ethical. We are concerned about this agency's direction and allocation of funds. We would ask you not only to deny the fee increase, but have this agency follow its statutes approved by you, stop unnecessary bureaucracy and government interference in our practices, and stop unethical behavior. Thank you. Dr. Stearns?
I'm just going to fill in a couple of places. My name is Dr. Brian Stearns. I practice in Salem. As Dr. Siegfried indicated, I'm one of the ODOC's founders, which occurred back in 1990, so we've been around for 11 years. We're actually Oregon's oldest state chiropractic association. Before I say anything else, do you have any specific questions about what it is has been discussed so far? The issue of sexual misconduct.
Mm-hmm. How many investigators do you have now?
One full-time.
One full-time.
Yes, ma'am.
And the request is to add another one.
Half.
You're saying the one is enough.
Well, compared to the medical board, it is. And our complaints aren't as according to the investigator there, ours don't even compare to the complaints those people have. And Mr. Vick said the same thing yesterday. He does a lot of malpractice law. It was his opinion that one was enough.
Thank you, Senator. Go ahead.
Relative to the sexual misconduct issue, this is an issue that actually ODOC brought to the forefront a number of years ago relative to one particular case. And I'm not going to go into the specifics of that case, but when we started making a lot of noise about some of the cases that were occurring, we were called unchristian. It was not a real pleasant experience to be called to the carpet for blowing the whistle on some of these cases. Fortunately, the board is taking up these cases, and we're happy to see that. It is not an issue relative to guidelines that we're concerned about when we're talking about sexual misconduct cases. These are cases that are already dealt with through statute and rule. Guidelines are just that. These are guidelines that are geared towards helping us to practice as chiropractors. It has nothing to do with our conduct. When we talk about guidelines, we already have four sets of national guidelines. The first set was created a number of years ago from Florida. It's called the National Florida Guidelines. We actually presented those to our Board of Examiners for review when they began the process of creating guidelines. I just got a copy of some board minutes recently that indicated not only did they look at them, but they really had no interest in looking at them at all. It was sort of embarrassing to have presented them to the board and have them indicate that, no, they weren't even going to look at them. We have three other sets of guidelines. We've got the CCP guidelines built from the Council on Chiropractic Practice. These were peer-reviewed by numerous chiropractors, not just in the United States, but in multiple countries. And we have several members in our organization who actually assisted in peer-reviewing these guidelines. These were sent to every chiropractor in the United States and Canada. Our association has adopted these. We've adopted the CCP guidelines. We have the ICA guidelines, which actually include the CCP guidelines as part of them. This ICA guidelines were adopted by our organization as well. These guidelines don't conflict with each other. They are all part and parcel and are good explanations of what it is to practice chiropractic. And finally, we have what are called the CAD guidelines. This is the cervical acceleration deceleration. This is specific to incidents of auto accident. And these are great guidelines too. In fact, the doctor who presented these to the Board of Examiners in, I think it was Oklahoma, and in giving a seminar there, he offered $10,000 to any doctor who could give scientific evidence showing that these were not valid, and he has yet to be taken up on that. These guidelines are all great sets of guidelines. I don't see why we need to spend the money to reinvent the wheel. These guidelines have been done. We have adopted all four sets of these guidelines, and these are we talked about the Association of Chiropractic Colleges. This is the basic paradigm of the chiropractic colleges that outlines what chiropractic is, and all of these guidelines fit that paradigm ideally.
Patrick? I just have a question. Of the three guidelines that were presented, how many other states have adopted those as their practice guidelines?
In your packet, there's a letter from the International Chiropractic Association, and nine other state organizations have adopted these. Now, I'm not sure what the organizations are called in Great Britain and Canada, but there's nine organizations that have adopted these. New York, California, Florida, New Jersey, Great Britain, Canada, International Chiropractic Association, and our association.
But the question is, I know that the different associations have guidelines.
Yes.
And then states adopt guidelines as well in other states, state boards. My question is, are there other state boards across the country who utilize these guidelines and adopted these guidelines?
None. There's three, but okay. So having said that, we were told that this is really out of the purview of the state board, and we were told this by Mr. Henry, who's a lawyer on the state board, who's a lay member, and he's told us very clearly, once you go to school, once you get licensed, and you've passed all your tests, you know what to do. You don't need a manual to practice. And so, this is why he's told us that he doesn't think this, he thinks this is out of the purview of the state board. Guidelines might be, peer review guidelines might be maybe part of it, I don't know, but in terms of telling you how to practice, I don't know what the answer is to that.
Follow up, Representative Patridge.
So in other states, though, do those boards adopt practice guidelines like the guidelines? Like these, I mean, are there standards of practice guidelines that are adopted in other states?
Yes, they are. There's three that we know of right now, but there's a lot of states who are considering them, and they're in the process of reviewing them for adoption.
Okay, that's follow-up. How many other states have practice guidelines, whether they're these guidelines or not, that their state boards, their state licensing boards have adopted?
If I may... I'm not sure how many states have guidelines as such. Each state has to set up minimum standards, and that's different than guidelines.
I understand that.
Okay. I know Oklahoma accepted these CAD guidelines specific to auto accident. As far as other guidelines from other states that have been accepted by boards, we only know of three at this point.
And those are?
I'm not sure.
Washington, Oklahoma, and Michigan.
And Florida.
Well, Florida has, yes, that's Florida. I'm sorry, I forgot Florida.
Indiana, Washington, Oklahoma, and Florida.
No. Washington, Oklahoma, Michigan. There are seven or eight that are questions, but one right next door is the state board.
And is that the CAD or is that the ICA? ICA guidelines. Oh, and the CCP and the national guidelines as well. Representative Patrick, follow up.
So then my next question is, what was the reason? I understand that we don't have a full idea. I understand the difference between minimum standards and practice guidelines. That's very clear to me. But my next question would be then, in light of the fact that we're not quite sure what states have standard of practice guidelines, what do you feel prohibits the board from adopting standards of practice from a legal standpoint? Why is it outside the scope of the statutes as written for Oregon or the legislative intent?
Dr. Sikaris?
Well, the standards of care, we have in your blue packet, it's called terminology. The terminology that you look for is standards of care are different. Standards of care is what basically chiropractic college teaches every chiropractor who's in practice. It's probably under the guidelines under the heading of guidelines, Jeff. There you go, the blue. About four or five pages, and you'll see terminology. It's going to look like this here. It'll say terminology and definitions. And we're getting real close to it. Maybe you don't have it.
Yeah, we have terminology and definition.
Oh, good, cool. Okay. If not, we have something to hand out here. Standards of care is what every chiropractic college teaches. It's sometimes referred to minimum standards. It's defined as the least a practitioner or a healthcare professional should render to a patient. It's taught to every chiropractor, everybody graduates practice under the importance of proper standards of patient care. The general purpose of standards is to guide or direct the practitioner in the conduct of the practice. So we know what practice standards are. Okay, that's just what is hammered to us. The guideline thing, professional guideline concept, is just kind of a guide that will help a practitioner treat a specific case. Now, for example, you got your Mercedes, you're out in Idaho someplace and something goes wrong with it, and you pull into a service station and you have to have a new water pump put in, and the fellow says, well, I don't know what to charge you, but I'm looking in my manual. He looks in his manual and he goes, okay, it's going to take 4.2 hours to fix this thing. That's a mechanic guideline manual. Okay? So that's what the guideline development are that we have. These are guidelines, in other words, to tell this practitioner how you would care for a person with this kind of problem. Okay, does that simplify it for you? So we have guidelines-based standards. And you can't say standards of practice, or we can't take the word out. You shouldn't say take the word standards and substitute for guidelines. They're not.
I apologize for being imprecise. Okay.
No. That's right, because a lot of chiropractors don't know that either.
That's why I have.
Okay, that's why worse. That's why there's the issue. There's the there is two different animals. Okay?
Thank you very much, Dr. Steer. Now, gentlemen, we have with us Senator George. Senator George, would you like to go ahead and... Oh, you're fine on time. You're probably one of the few people in the building, so... would you go testify on Bill 35? Represent me in favor of, please, Senator, thank you. No, sir. We are honored to have you here, Senator George. Please.
I'd just like to make a brief follow-up, and it's been clarified to me that guidelines, according to, should be endorsed by boards of examiners. They don't adopt guidelines. That's the job of the state associations. We're the ones who adopt them, but we're looking to have the board endorse guidelines, which is their job.
Other questions, Representative Patridge?
It's becoming clear to me.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Patridge. I think what I would like, Senator, did you have a question? What I would like to do is call about a 2-minute recess while I confer with legislative fiscal office, so that all, and my colleagues, to see, to make sure that I don't ask any questions or cover ground that has already been covered. So if I may, I'm just going to gavel for a quick 2-minute recess. You've been here nearly an hour, so we'll just go into...